NPHET plan to ground children for 2 weeks. That's a headline in the Irish Independent, which in common with the Irish Examiner, Irish Times and Irish Daily Mail, leads today with yesterday's NPHET meeting, which recommended that indoor gatherings for children, such as nativity plays, sleepovers, birthday parties and play dates, should be avoided for the next fortnight, and that children over the age of 9 should wear masks on public transport and in shops. It's also recommended that from third class upwards, children should start wearing masks in school. The Independent and Times also report on concerns in government over the new COVID-19 variant in Africa. Questions are already being asked if this new variant might make vaccines less effective and imperil efforts to fight the pandemic. Although no cases of the variant have been reported in Europe, it has been identified in a number of countries in southern Africa and Hong Kong, which, as you'll have heard in the bulletin, has prompted the UK to suspend flights from 6 African countries from today. The Examiner gives front page coverage to a report on sustainable travel commissioned by the Department of Transport, which recommends the introduction of congestion charges for the cities of Dublin, Cork, Waterford, Limerick and Galway. Back on the front of the Times, meanwhile, it's reported there that the hauliers who brought traffic in Dublin to a standstill this week in a protest over fuel prices have threatened to hold a much bigger demonstration in early December if the government doesn't take action. For its lead story, the Belfast Telegraph interviews filmmaker Sean Murray, who talks about how he was approached by convicted killer Stephen McKinney to make a documentary about his life. The 45-year-old was given a life sentence yesterday in Belfast Crown Court for murdering his wife on a boating holiday on Loch Earn in April 2017. The Irish News leads with a story about the Elk Complex in County Antrim, which had its entertainment licence suspended following complaints of overcrowding at a teenage disco at the venue earlier this month. One parent tells the paper that she raised concerns about the event beforehand in light of the Greenvale Hotel tragedy, which claimed the lives of 3 teenagers in 2019. The prospect that the new bank holiday, which has been proposed for next year, is likely to fall on Friday, the 18th of March, generates the lead story in today's Irish Daily Star. The fact that it falls the day after St. Patrick's Day, which also happens to be Cheltenham Gold Cup Day, inspires the lead headline, Crack Friday. This is the Friday, meanwhile, that children all over the country get to stay up really, really late to watch the Late Late Toy Show. The Disney classic The Lion King is the theme of tonight's show, and there are lots of pictures on the front of today's papers of Ryan Tuberty doing his thing with some of the children who'll be appearing on tonight's show. And finally, the Irish Daily Mirror and Irish Sun both lead with yesterday's sellout of 400,000 Garth Brooks tickets for the 5 nights he'll be playing in Croke Park next September. Five Alive-O is the headline in the Mirror. The Sun, meanwhile, is all about the money, noting that the singer raked in €32 million from yesterday's ticket sales. Garth Brooks is the headline there.
The UK has imposed a travel ban on 6 southern African countries. This is due to a new coronavirus variant in South Africa that UK health authorities say is the most worrying they have yet seen. There have been no cases of the B11529 variant or new variant found yet in the UK or indeed in Europe. But at this stage, it seems to be more transmissible and better able to overcome vaccine protection than Delta. Sky News correspondent Enda Brady has more on this story. This was a surprise move, wasn't it, this travel ban? Tell us what countries are covered and how it will work, Enda.
Yeah, it was a surprise move, but Sajid Javid, the health secretary, has moved very, very quickly on this indeed. And I think the big fear here has always been the emergence of a mutation or a variant that could evade the vaccine program. So he's moved very, very quickly indeed. 6 countries, all in southern Africa, the main one, of course, being South Africa. In terms of arrivals into this country, we've been seeing between 500 and 700 people a day flying in from South Africa. So all flights from South Africa, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Lesotho will be temporarily suspended. And then as of 4 a.m. on Sunday, anyone coming back from those countries, they will only allow in British and Irish nationals, and they will have to quarantine. But Sajid Javid, he said that this is by far the most worrying variant that has come to light in the pandemic.
And of course, this all happening so fast, the airlines taken by surprise, are there flights available to get people out who are looking to come back to the UK, for instance, the impact on the rugby this weekend?
Yes, so I think the airline industry will be shocked by this because they had had huge bookings for South Africa, in particular for Christmas. Obviously, a lot of people wanting to get away, people who had been waiting and waiting to get away and to be reunited with family and to travel and have a sunshine Christmas. That's probably not going to happen for a lot of people now. It's a temporary ban on flights. So the vibe from government really seems to be that just a watch and wait. There are no cases of this variant in the UK at all right now. But Sajid Javid just making the point that, you know, they have to be careful. And Boris Johnson's government, you know, I can remember February and March of 2020 as the pandemic was beginning, reporting live outside Heathrow Airport as plane after plane was coming here from China. And Johnson took huge criticism over not moving quickly enough, but they've moved like lightning on this.
And indeed, you say like lightning, because the speed of this is remarkable. Most of us hadn't heard of this new variant, you know, until the past couple of days. And suddenly we're getting this reaction from the UK. I understand the UK health authorities, they met their South African counterparts yesterday. And of course, the South Africans are very good at keeping track of new variants with their sequencing. And that's why they got so worried with the information they got heard directly from South Africa.
Yeah, so the spread of this variant in Pretoria has been very, very worrying indeed. I mean, we've heard from the South African experts, and they say that, you know, it is now the predominant variant in Pretoria. They had 100 samples analysed, and it was the predominant variant. And we've seen mutations, we've seen variants here before. Delta got into this country, and within a matter of months, it was the dominant variant. So the fear about this one is mainly that it could evade the vaccine program. And I mean, Boris Johnson has staked the house, the country, on the vaccination program. And last weekend it hit 15 million booster jabs. So he doesn't want anything to undermine the success of that and keeping everything open. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all seen the lockdowns in Europe over the last few days. There's no talk of any other further lockdown restrictions here. Life is going on. He seems happy enough with 42,000 cases every day. And people here, it's not a topic of discussion. Restrictions, lockdown. And I think in all honesty, unless you were travelling to one of these countries in the coming days or weeks, most people here will back the Prime Minister on this.
And South Africa saying this may have been a rushed decision. They want to engage with the British authorities. They're worried about the impact on tourism and business links between both countries. But from what you're saying, it doesn't sound like Boris Johnson will be minded to do a U-turn here very soon.
No, I can't see it happening. I mean, it's ultra cautious, and they've made the decision, and he will not back down from this now. I think it's a watching brief. I think they'll watch and see what happens. But, as you know, he will not take the risk that a couple of cases gets in here and suddenly it goes off like a rocket. I mean, we've just seen what a relentless virus this is, that if you give COVID and its mutations a chance, it will happily, just thrive. And, of course, winter conditions here, absolutely perfect for respiratory infections. So I don't think he will be taking too much heed of any other governments, or indeed the airline industry, trying to put pressure on him.
Enda Brady, Sky News correspondent, thank you. We can go to some reaction from parents to the decisions around mask wearing and the decision awaited around vaccinating the 5 to 11 year olds. Here's our reporter Fiacra O'Kiona. He's talking to parents at Wesley College sports pitches in Dublin.
Well, I have two 11-year-olds and they would be perfectly fine to wear a mask in school. However, I have a 7-year-old and I think that's too young because they'd be touching their face, taking off the mask, all of that. So I think it really depends on the age of the child. I don't think primary schools can be treated as one block.
Two kids, one's 12 and one's 7. I don't think they need to wear masks in school at this age. Secondary school, fair enough. Hopefully by the time they move on, we won't have to wear masks anymore. But at the moment, there's enough going on in primary schools. They don't need to wear masks.
The only thing I'd be concerned with is I have a son with additional needs. And I just don't know how it would work in that situation, you know. And he is 10. And I think a lot of the time kids would be pulling the mask on and off. So I really don't know how effective they would be.
I think that would be a very good idea, considering what we've gone through over the past 18 plus months. our kids are just as vulnerable as the rest of us, and we need to stop the spread of this virus.
The other issue which is being discussed is whether kids should have the vaccine. What's your own view of it?
Well, I know parents are divided on it. Personally, I'd be very keen for my kids to have the vaccine and for our normal lives to resume as a whole country as soon as possible. And my kids themselves would be enthusiastic about taking the vaccine for that reason as well.
I'm not in favour for that age group to get vaccinated. My 12-year-old is a type 1 diabetic. I'm not a big fan on it.
Julia's only 11, so she will be having, hopefully, the vaccine coming up. And even then, I'm still torn. It doesn't benefit them. It benefits the rest of society.
I'd say absolutely. Go for it. I've got an 11-year-old playing soccer here tonight, and I've got a 13-year-old as well. Unfortunately, the 11-year-olds, they're not eligible just yet. But hopefully soon. We need to stop the spread of this virus.
Some views there on mask wearing and on vaccination for children. Christine Lotter is back with us, Professor of Immunology at Dublin City University. Christine, we'll come to some of the views expressed by parents there in a moment, but you were talking to us before the line went down about this new variant being found now in southern African countries. What's known so far?
Yes, Mary, and I think the concern is because we don't know as much as we'd like to know so far. So one of the key things I think that's concerning is the fact that there's a much higher number of mutations in this variant than we've seen before. There's a lot of mutations in the spike protein, which our vaccines target in terms of making antibodies to that protein. And we've seen the impact of having mutations in Delta and kind of a little bit of an impact on how good our vaccine is against Delta. And the concern is that we don't know quite yet how vaccine evasive this variant might be. So it's very much a watch and wait. In terms of waiting for some scientists to understand a bit more about the impact of these mutations. We do know that one of the mutations that it does have is similar to one in Alpha and Delta, which made it more transmissible. And that's also of concern that it might spread quite quickly. And I suppose the information we're getting is that this has become dominant in a small number of cases very, very quickly. And that is the concern. So I wouldn't be surprised if the WHO switched it from a variant of interest to a variant of concern in the coming days.
And how quickly will the information that scientists like yourself need, how quickly will that become available so we know what we're dealing with here?
I would say that we're going to have some information in the coming weeks. I mean, really what we'll be looking at is how good are the neutralising antibodies to the spike protein against this variant. And they're, you know, and the type of, I suppose, research that we've been doing on all of the variants as they arise. I think the other important thing to say is that in the background, the vaccine companies have been able to, I suppose, tweak vaccines to become more specific for variants as they arise. So we do have the technology to be able mm-hmm. to tweak vaccines in these kind of cases. So I think that's a positive thing to know in the background, that we have technology that can target different variants as they arise.
All right, let's move on to these questions around mask wearing and vaccination for children. We were probably getting you back online while Fiacra was talking to parents out on the sports pitches last night with their children. But they, just to talk about masks, first of all, they raised some, you know, some concerns. One woman said her son has additional needs and she would worry about her son having to wear a mask, and I suppose the managing of wearing a mask for children from age 9. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no doubt that mask wearing, and, you know, we've a lot of science to back it up, it does reduce transmission and can be a very effective tool when used, you know, in indoor settings. I think that we're talking about a group of children where implementation of any recommendation around masks is going to pose a challenge. For, you know, individual children will have individual needs and may or may not be able to wear a mask. Some of us have seen lots of children in indoor settings already wearing masks of that age group, and they're clearly comfortable wearing masks. I would like to see that there's a recommendation and guidance to parents on the benefits of wearing masks, and to recommend that they can wear masks in school if they are able and a parent is comfortable with that. I would not like to see this mandated. I don't think that it's going to be a recommendation that's going to be implementable across the board. I think that it's going to be a case-by-case basis for every child and for every parent. But there are benefits to wearing masks. And I suppose as a parent, you weigh up those benefits to your child in a classroom where we know case numbers are very high at the moment. So I would say recommendation and guidance for parents rather than mandating.
And on to vaccination. What would you say to the parent who said to Fiacre there, vaccination for children from 5 to 11, it doesn't benefit them, it benefits the rest of us?
So there's going to be two benefits to vaccinating children. I think the first one at the moment is that we've learned a lot more about this virus, particularly over the last year. And one of the things that I suppose is very unique about this virus is the long-lasting effects on individuals. And we saw that initially in adults where case numbers were high, but we're starting to see a lot of data come through, particularly from the UK and the US, where we're seeing long-lasting symptoms in children for up to 2 and 4 months afterwards. And those long COVID-type symptoms can occur in between 4 to 10% of children, depending on what research study that you would actually read. That's a high number of children. And I think that the impact on children is not just about the clinical impact of the infection. It's the impact on their education, not being in school, not engaging in extracurricular activities, and not being able to socialise. So I think there's a broader impact on children that we need to consider and that every parent needs to consider when they are thinking about whether or not to vaccinate their child. So I think that's, you know, while people might say, well, if we're only vaccinating children to protect, you know, population immunity, I would kind of say that there is a huge advantage to children in being vaccinated. Okay. Because, you know, as I've said, long COVID is an issue. Mm-hmm. But secondly, we don't know whether other variants are going to arise. Okay. that are more damaging. And having a high level of immunity in the population will really, I think, be useful into the future when we think about variants.
Christine Losher, Professor of Immunology at Dublin City University, thank you.
The government has been advised to increase city parking charges by up to 300%. And this is one of a range of measures proposed in a report to cut car emissions. For more on this report and its recommendations, I'm joined by the Business Post political editor, Michael Brennan. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Anya.
Now, you've been writing about this, so tell us what the Five Cities Demand Management Study is and what it's recommending.
Yeah, this is a study that's really looking at getting down car usage in the five cities. They're seen as the easiest wins because there is public transport, whereas if you try and reduce car journeys for people in rural areas, they don't have the same options. That's the thinking anyway. But they're very much looking at things like increasing car parking charges. That 300% increase, if you were paying €5 an hour, you'd be paying €20 an hour. And they believe that kind of measure would put more people off from going into city centres in their cars.
€20 an hour to park your car in town, and that's just the start of it. What else does it propose?
Yeah, they're looking at things like perhaps easier things like 15-minute neighbourhoods and cities so that councils would plan neighbourhoods better. You'd have your shop and your workplace within 15 minutes walk or cycle and you wouldn't need your car. But they're also looking at things down the road like the congestion charge in Dublin and Cork. They're looking at clean air zones where you'd have to put a sticker on your car if it was an electric car and be allowed into certain areas. And they're even talking about maybe a 30-kilometre speed limit all around city areas rather than just on some streets as you have at the moment.
And what about car parking for people who, you know, drive into work every day, park their car, they've got workplace parking in the city centre and, of course, government responsible for a lot of those spaces?
Yeah, they have mentioned, for example, reducing car parking in spaces as well in the city centres. When it comes to workplace parking levy, that's a bit further down the priority list, but they have particularly mentioned Galway as a place where a lot of businesses provide free parking for their workers and that maybe they should do a pilot study there to look at reducing that and see would that deal with Galway's terrible traffic problems.
Now, of course, this is, you know, where the rubber meets the road, isn't it, in terms of the delivery of the transport sector, which is supposed to cut emissions by 40 to 50% by 2030. So, however controversial, something along these lines will have to have a similar effect.
Yeah, the government and particularly the Green Party know that there's a big risk they'll be accused of a war on cars here and being very much anti-motorist. But if they're to reduce those targets, they have a separate target of getting car journeys down by 10% by the end of this decade. And if they don't take some measures, especially as the population grows and perhaps more people buy cars, they think that, you know, they're going to miss those targets. So some of the things in this report, the government thinks will have to happen.
All right, we'll have more reaction to this later in the programme. For the moment, Michael Brennan, political editor with the Business Post. Thank you very much indeed.
RTE Radio 1 Sport with Kia. Going electric? Go really electric with a plug-in hybrid from Kia.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Now, we heard about the travel ban between the UK and six southern African countries a little earlier. Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the EU Commission, has just tweeted that the Commission will propose, it says, in close coordination with member states, to activate the emergency brake to stop air travel from the southern African region due to this new variant of concern. We'll have more on that story coming up in the programme. But of course, the Munster rugby team, Des Cahill, is in South Africa as well. What's the story there?
Well, there's no word from Munster. I've contacted the IRFU as well. I'd say the IRFU will make the call. I can't see the game going ahead. And interestingly, in the last few minutes, the leaderboard for the Joburg Open in golf, 15 players have withdrawn so far, British, including four Irish players. Cormac Sharvin, Paul Dunn, Niall Carney and Johnny Caldwell, they've all withdrawn this morning, so they're all obviously heading for the planes. The story about Munster's game is they're due to play the Bulls tomorrow. This is the new URC Championship, where the old Pro 14 has been added to with the addition of four South African teams who will bring more money to the competition for TV rights, and it makes it more attractive, etc. And so they came to Europe and they based themselves here and they played and lost most of the games. They played the Welsh, Scottish and Irish teams here. Now they're at home and now the teams from here will go over there and play. So this weekend, Munster, Zebra from Italy and the two Welsh sides, Scarlets and Cardiff, are due to play. Both Scarlets and Cardiff have gone on social media and said they are making, as a matter of urgency, they're making arrangements to come home. So I'm expecting them to leave there this morning ahead of the games. There's no word from Munster at all yet. Munster are due to play the Bulls in Pretoria tomorrow, remain there and play the Lions in Johannesburg next weekend. Mm-hmm. Then when they come back, they have the big Heineken Cup game in England, in Coventry, on the 12th of December. So if they're not back before AM on Sunday morning, they would have to face a 10-day hotel quarantine if they were coming through the UK or whatever.
You might well have more information on that during the course of the programme.
I think we will. I'm expecting a reply from Munster. I'm surprised. I can't see the game going ahead. And it has broader implications, I would have thought, Mary, for the whole the URC, the championship, you know, getting the games played and with the TV rights and TV money, etc. Obviously, the URC games here will go ahead. Connacht meet the Ospreys tonight at the sports grounds, and tomorrow night's the big derby game, Leinster hosting Ulster at the RDS. Elsewhere in soccer, the Republic of Ireland's women team were held to a 1-1 draw by Slovakia at Tala Stadium last night in their World Cup qualifier. A disappointing result for Ireland, but it wasn't a good performance in truth. Slovakia went ahead early in the second half. Katie McCabe scored the equaliser in the 65th minute. Ireland now play Georgia next week. After the game, Adrian Eames got the reaction of Irish coach Vera Powell.
Well, we expect a very difficult game. And I think that people thought that their ranking would reflect also their play, which is not the case because they are all professionals now. So the ranking will come up very soon. They have good possessional play. They were very aggressive in that, and we had problems keeping the ball under the pressure. And if you cannot keep the ball under the pressure, you start to give long balls into a defense, and then the ball comes back, and you're just fighting. The second half was better, and after the goal against, it was as if we woke up. And the last 20 minutes, we're just constantly there. But we need to put that ball in. The chances that we had, we should have scored one of them.
And obviously, as you're aware, Sweden beat Finland. So how do you see the group at the moment?
Well, it's good that Sweden beat Finland. we have to win on Tuesday.
Simple as that.
Yeah,
And it is the bottom side in the group that you're facing, Georgia, on Tuesday.
Yeah, but also Georgia has had minimal losses. So it is a very, very difficult group. And I was already afraid that we would run the losing points because I said earlier this will be a very difficult game for us. We must win on Tuesday, that's clear.
Does it feel like a setback after the great result in Helsinki?
Yes, but especially that we find it difficult to keep the ball under pressure.
Okay, so it's all good to next Tuesday now in that Georgia game. Elsewhere, West Ham are through to the last 16 of the Europa League with a game to spare. They had a 2-0 victory at Rapid Vienna. Celtic's hopes, though, of Europa League progression are gone. They had a late collapse, conceded two late goals and lost 3-2 at Bayer Leverkusen. Rangers beat Slavia Prague and Leicester City were 3-1 winners over Legia Warsaw. But the worst result of the night, unquestionably, Tottenham. They lost 2-1 to Slovenian Minos Mura in the Europa Conference League. Now, ahead of Sunday's cup final here, which we'll be looking ahead to later in the programme, the big game tonight sees Waterford play UCD at Richmond Park in the playoff for a place in next season's Premier Division. Waterford sacked their manager Mark Bircham this week, but he told a British radio station yesterday his refusal to play the owner's son led to a deterioration in their relationship. Manchester United are close to appointing Ralf Rangnick as their interim manager on a 6-month contract. He's a lot of experience with German clubs and is considered to be behind the success and rise of the RB Leipzig club in the Bundesliga. A great win for the Irish men's basketball team last night. They beat Cyprus in their Eurobasket qualifier in Nicosia. Jordan Blount top scored with 21 points as Ireland won by 81 points to 73. Racing, and after Willie Mullins' treble at Thurles yesterday and ahead of a big weekend, the action today is in Dundalk. The first race starts at 4 o'clock and finally a reminder of sunny summer days ahead because the draw for the 2022 Provincial Football Championships has been announced, will take place tomorrow on Saturday Sport at 3 o'clock.
Most of us have already been bombarded with ads about Black Friday, with offers of so-called amazing deals and discounts for all kinds of goods and services, and you can have it all with just a click of a button on your phone. But as our next guest, consumer journalist Siobhan Maguire, points out, it's as well to be careful before you get scammed or spend far more than you'd wish. Siobhan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's likely, I think, Irish people will spend more than 40 million euro today. So Black Friday is certainly a big deal in terms of that kind of turnover. But your message is buyer beware.
Absolutely. I mean, there's been so much hype about this. So when Black Friday today actually happens, people tend to get caught up in it and panic a little bit and start buying stuff that they actually don't need. There's been several pieces of research in recent weeks that show that the deals, the all singing, the all dancing deals that we're going to see today on various websites aren't everything that they're hyped up to be, that some prices were cheaper 6 months prior to this, they'll be cheaper 6 months later. So the whole point of Black Friday is to buy something that you actually really need to get, that you want to get. You're not to be bamboozled by the fact that something has a 50% price markdown on it if you don't actually need it. And then as well, the idea is to know exactly where you're buying from. So we have lots and lots of websites posing with a .ie address, domain name, which appears to be located in Ireland, and they're actually located in third countries like the UK, like America, like China. And if you buy from these countries, then you are facing additional charges when it comes to shipping. So it's about just being a little bit savvy and doing your due diligence and not being caught up in the hype.
And remembering the impact of Brexit, of course, if you're ordering from UK website. The other thing, I mean, it's a huge day, obviously, for the big online, you know, giants like Amazon. But they have workers in 20 countries striking today. Siobhan, why?
Well, so this is kind of a global movement, and it includes the Amazon offices here in Ireland and the warehouses. So basically, this is it's going under the hashtag Make Amazon Pay, because they're calling for fairer wages. We know that an awful lot of workers in Amazon across the world are on contracts as opposed to being in full-time employment. So they're calling for fairer wages, they're calling for fairer taxes, and they're calling for for the company to basically be cognizant of the impact it's having on the planet. They tried to do this last year, the groups behind these protests, and it was a fairly small affair. This year it'll be much, much bigger.
All right, Siobhan, thank you for that. That's Siobhan Maguire, consumer journalist, and her advice to make sure it's what you want in the first place and think before you click.
Bohemians Football Club has been busy on and off the pitch. Fans, of course, will be hoping they can lift the cup on Sunday. And the club has raised thousands of euro in a toy drive as part of an appeal to buy Christmas gifts for children living in direct provision. Daniel Lambert is the chief operating officer at Bohemians, and he's on the line. Hello, Daniel.
Good morning, how are you?
We'll talk football in a minute, but let's talk about this toy drive first of all. It's been growing in ambition and scale since 2018. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I suppose in 2018 we tried to get gifts for just for one centre in Clondalkin, and I think there was about 80 children, and then we went in 2019 up to about 500, last year about 1500 kids, and this year we're aiming to get gifts for every kid in direct provision in the country. It's about 2,500 children in conjunction with Massey.
How are you getting on?
Good. We're at the moment, we're at about just under 50,000 euro. We're hoping to get to 75,000 euro by Sunday. And we're working with the RDS, who've been brilliant. We started working with the RDS last year and with DHL. RDS, they allow us to use one of the halls out there to sort and pack the toys. And DHL, without them, we just couldn't get into all the centres. So we have the structure in place to be able to do it. Just hopefully we can get just the last little amount in over the next few days.
So what are you looking for at this stage? Do you want money? Do you want donations of gifts? What are you asking people to do?
There's three ways people can help. You can donate via the GoFundMe, which is on the Bohemian social media pages. The second way is to post one for all vouchers to the club. We give vouchers to kids over the age of 13. Or the last way would be today to drop gifts into the stadium in Phibsborough, or to Bang Bang in Phibsborough on Saturday and Sunday when the club will be closed this weekend. So you could drop toys in from all ages, right from toddlers up to teenagers.
And then you all get busy in the RDS wrapping and packing.
Yeah, we're out in the RDS on the week of the 6th of December, and we'll have volunteers from Phibsborough, from the club, some of the players, and it's a big operation. Last year we ended up with about, I don't know, maybe 70 or 80 pallets of toys, and this year it'll be more, so there's quite a lot of toys at the end, and it's brilliant to see them all leave with DHL and go to the centres, and like obviously the kids in direct provision, it's probably difficult circumstances for them, but to be able to brighten up their Christmas just for a few days is a nice thing to do, and thankfully we've, as you said, it's been growing each year.
You got some toys last year, I think, from the Late Late Toy Show as well.
Yeah, we did indeed. They brought down some toys afterwards, and there were some really nice toys brought down there, and we sent some out to some of the bigger centres like Mosny. Like there's over 200 children in Mosny.
It is a lovely activity from Bowes Football Club. You'd have a good youth wing as well, and of course a big day on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday's our biggest day since 2008, so we're in the Aviva. It looks like it's going to be a record crowd in the Aviva and maybe even break the record for the cup final from 1945. So it's going to be a really big day for the club and the players.
Well, the best of luck to yourself and to St. Pat's, and we look forward to a good game. Daniel Lambert, thanks a million. We should say, of course, that the Bowes toy delivery doesn't cut across anything that Santa is planning for all the boys and girls on Christmas Eve as well.
The Financial Services Union holds its annual conference today and tomorrow. Among the items up for discussion, a proposal to seek a 6% pay hike for frontline staff in the retail banking sector. John O'Connell is a Secretary General of the FSU. That figure raised some eyebrows when it was floated last week. John, what's the rationale for seeking a pay hike of that magnitude?
Well, let me set out the rationale, Brian, for you. So the bank pay system doesn't have incremental payments. The only way you progress is through a two-pot system which incorporates inflation and performance. So our rationale is very clear. Our members' living standards have been eroded, savagely so, with the inflation at 5.1%, and we apologise to no one for putting in a pay claim to protect their living standards. Banks are returning to profitability, they're talking about dividends to shareholders, and staff have made a huge contribution over the past 2 years, particularly in terms of working through and keeping a stable banking system for the citizens of Ireland throughout the pandemic.
Now, inflation was at 5% in the year to October, but for the year, the full year, it's likely to come in at around 2.5% to 3%. Many commentators say it's a temporary spike. So is there a danger here that we could be getting into a wage price spiral?
I think initially people were talking about an inflation spike, but I think now people are beginning to come back, the ECB, the central bank, and say this could be with us for quite a while. And though they predict in latter years a downturn in inflation, that definitely for the future it's with us. I should also say that, Brian, in the finance sector in particular, the CSO has identified a real problem around gender pay, where they see a figure of 30% gender pay gap in the finance sector.
The union has been very prominent in calling for a forum on the future of banking, especially in the light of KBC and Ulster leaving the market. Now, the minister has announced the terms of a review. Are you satisfied with what's been announced?
We welcome it. We've been calling it for 12 months. It must be transparent and inclusive of all. So that those are two keys for us that are essential for a success. Equally, I think the two things that we see as being central to being debated is this stakeholder versus shareholder debate. That has to be debated. What type of banking model does Ireland want? And also how change is managed. We have had a lot of change in the sector and with a lot more to come. And we believe that there's better ways of managing change. We think what it's not about is the pay cap.
Just briefly, how are talks going with KBC about the transfer of staff to Bank of Ireland?
KBC are an example of a bank. They don't talk directly to us. We have raised a number of matters to the Labour Court now at this stage, and we're hoping they'll do the right thing and turn up to the Labour Court. Bank of Ireland, which are on the other side of that, has engaged fully with us and comprehensively in relation to the transfer, so we've full engagement with Bank of Ireland. But it's time for KBC to do the right thing and engage directly with us.
John O'Connell of the FSU, thank you very much.
NPHET's new guidelines on COVID measures for children, Garth Brooks' five-night ticket sellout, and The Late Late Show does The Lion King. Those are some of the stories carried on your front pages this morning. The Irish Independent, Irish Examiner, Irish Times and Irish Daily Mail all lead with yesterday's NPHET meeting, which recommended that indoor gatherings for children, such as nativity plays, sleepovers, birthday parties and play dates, should be avoided for the next fortnight, and that children over the age of 9 should wear masks on public transport and in shops and in school from third class upwards. NPHET plan to ground children for 2 weeks is the headline in The Independent. The Independent and Times also report on concerns in government over the new COVID-19 variant in Africa. Questions are already being asked if this new variant might make vaccines less effective and imperil efforts to fight the pandemic. For its lead story, the Belfast Telegraph interviews filmmaker Sean Murray, who talks about how he was approached by convicted killer Stephen McKinney to make a documentary about his life. The 45-year-old was given a life sentence yesterday in Belfast Crown Court for murdering his wife on a boating holiday on Lough Erne in April 2017. The Irish News leads with a story about the Elk Complex in County Antrim, which had its entertainment licence suspended following complaints of overcrowding at a teenage disco at the venue earlier this month. The Irish Daily Mirror and Irish Sun both lead with yesterday's sellout of 400,000 Garth Brooks tickets for the five nights he'll be playing in Croke Park next September. Five alive-o is the headline in the Mirror. The Sun, meanwhile, is all about the money, noting that the singer raked in €32 million from yesterday's ticket sales. Garth Brooks is the headline there. The prospect that the new bank holiday, which has been promised for next year, is likely to fall on Friday the 18th of March, generates the lead story in today's Irish Daily Star. The fact that it falls the day after St Patrick's Day, which also happens to be Cheltenham Gold Cup Day, inspires the lead headline, Crack Friday. Elsewhere this morning, some of the people who were recognised at the Netwatch Family Carer of the Year Awards last night are featured in a number of today's papers. Karen Smith from Drogheda was the overall winner. Karen cares for three of her four children who have additional needs, her father who has developed blindness due to diabetes and her mother who has emphysema. The Star has a picture of Robbie, the 5-year-old Springer Spaniel Revenue Sniffer Dog, who sniffed out drugs worth just under €10 million hidden in a shipment of furniture that came into Dublin Port from the Netherlands on Wednesday. The Times reports on the protest held by the Irish thalidomide survivors outside Leinster House yesterday, calling for a state apology on the 60th anniversary of the international withdrawal of the drug. And finally, tonight's Late Late Show receives lots of coverage in today's papers, with The Lion King as the theme of tonight's show. There are plenty of pictures of Ryan Tuberty doing his thing with some of the children who we'll be seeing on screen later tonight. The Ryan King is a caption alongside pictures of the presenter on the front of both The Sun and Mirror. And The Independent features some of the children who've appeared on previous toy shows. Amy Keogh, who got to meet her hero Ed Sheeran back in 2013 when she was just 11, is pictured on the front of today's paper. She's all grown up now and is studying to be a secondary school teacher in DCU. The Herald, meanwhile, runs with a picture of Ryan sitting on a miniature Vespa on its front page, alongside a caption which features the song and phrase which has become synonymous with The Lion King. Hakuna Matata, no worries.
Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on Friday, the 26th of November, and this is Morning Ireland with Mary Wilson and Áine Lawler.
And coming up between now and 9 here on Morning Ireland, another COVID curveball, new variant worry in Southern Africa, vaccines and masks for children, also a UK travel ban on six African nations, a massive hike in car parking fees, and no more sleeps. Tonight is the night for the Late Late Toy Show.
In business, we'll hear from the Financial Services Union on its 6% pay hike demand for retail bank staff, and two Irishmen step down from the top of major UK companies.
In sport, Munster's rugby game in South Africa tomorrow in real doubt following that discovery of a new COVID variant there, and why the Bohemian St. Pat's Cup final is proving such a hit with supporters.
All to come in the next 2 hours, and we begin with the news from Vivian Traynor.
Discussions around the possible introduction of masks for some primary school children are likely to get underway today. NPHET has recommended the wearing of masks for primary school children from third class upwards until the middle of next February. It is also recommended that children avoid certain gatherings for at least the next 2 weeks, including nativity, performances, indoor birthday parties, sleepovers and playdates. Here's our political correspondent Micheál Lehane.
This proposal was not unexpected, and a final decision on the matter will be taken by Cabinet on Tuesday. NPHET has also recommended that children aged 9 and over wear masks on public transport, in shops and in other public settings where the rule currently applies for those aged 13 and over. The public health experts are advising too that children avoid certain gatherings for at least the next 2 weeks. These include nativity performances and other similar seasonal events. They are also calling for a pause on indoor birthday parties, sleepovers and playdates. However, small numbers could meet outdoors. And NPHET has recommended the extension of the COVID pass to all settings where there is a high risk of virus transmission.
The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has said he's deeply concerned about the emergence of a new variant of COVID-19, which has been identified in a number of countries in Southern Africa and Hong Kong. In a statement last night, the Department of Health said in recent days it has been monitoring the emergence of the variant and said no cases have been reported in Europe so far. A travel ban has been imposed by England, Scotland and Northern Ireland on six African nations due to rising concerns over the variant. Professor Cliona O'Farrelly, a comparative immunologist at Trinity College in Dublin, said the new variant was concerning but not surprising. She said it emphasised the need for a global approach to the vaccination programme.
In order for this particular new variant to become prevalent, it has a very high threshold in order to replace Delta. We know the vaccines cover us against Delta. So the threat and this new variant, the threshold for it to become, if you like, to evade the immunity that vaccines give us is actually exceptionally high. So, you know, while it may evade some aspects of our immune system, we have multiple arms of the immune system which target the virus at different sites. So it would be quite unlikely that the virus would modify.
The Department of Health was notified yesterday evening of 4,764 new cases of COVID-19. There were 598 people with the virus in hospital, 126 of whom were in intensive care. British officials are due in France today following the deaths of 27 people on Wednesday after their small inflatable boat capsized in the Channel as they tried to get to the UK. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has urged France President Emmanuel Macron to accept the return of migrants who cross the Channel to England. In a letter to the President Macron, Mr. Johnson set out a 5-point plan to tackle the migrant crisis, including joint patrols to prevent boats from leaving France. International peacekeepers have been deployed as anti-government protests continue for a third day in the Solomon Islands. Thousands of people descended on the city's Chinatown and business districts, looting shops and burning buildings. Authorities requested international support earlier this week. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison gave this statement at a news conference.
Overnight, we have seen what started as a protest. We have seen some more indiscriminate looting and things of that nature, which is a more general civil unrest and behaviour, and we want to see that come under control. At present, that is proceeding, I'd say, reasonably, but we're on alert, and that's why we're continuing to provide further support.
The UK's Brexit Minister David Frost will meet European Commission Vice President Mara Sefcovic in London today to discuss potential changes to the Northern Ireland Protocol. A Downing Street spokesperson said the pair will try to agree a deal that can address the issues that people are facing on the ground. The UK has not ruled out the use of Article 16 of the Protocol, although the International Trade Secretary Anne-Marie Trevelyan has suggested that option would not be used before Christmas. The meeting between Lord Frost and Mr. Sefcovic also comes at a time of strained relations over post-Brexit licence.
Now back to that story we heard about earlier from Michael Brennan. A hike in city centre parking charges of up to 300%, which is one of many recommendations in a study called the Five Cities Demand Management Study, which is aimed to tell the government how they could achieve their target of halving transport emissions by the end of the decade. Now, that's a firm commitment. But as we heard earlier from Michael, it could see you paying €20 an hour in car parking. Richard Guiney is the chief executive of Dublin Town. That won't be news that would be welcomed by a lot of motorists, Richard Guiney. But is that the kind of change that's going to have to come?
Well, I think there's other things that we can do that are probably more effective. So more people travel into Dublin, a higher percentage of people travel into Dublin as commuters than as shoppers. And yet there's still free car parking being provided by the state and other employers. And what they've done in places like Norwich Nottingham in the UK is that they basically have introduced a levy that the employer pays. They can transfer it to the employee, but it's actually been very effective at reducing the number of cars coming into their cities. And I think we can look at things like that first. If we want to be real about it, that's where we have to be. And we also need to accelerate very quickly the rollout of our public transport. We need to give people those options.
And what about the impact of all of this on retailers? I mean, they're already struggling with the impact of the pandemic. We've seen city centres, not just in Ireland, but across the world, take a fair hit there. So if we had all these, climate mitigation measures kicking in and limiting car transportation, what effect would that have on retail?
Well, look, in terms of cities, people are less likely to drive into cities than they are to out-of-town shopping centres. So again, that does need to be considered in terms of policy. So before the pandemic, about 20% of people coming into the city to shop would have driven, compared with 80% to the shopping centres. So I think that does need to be considered. I think the public are, certainly in our surveys, the public are very supportive of climate change measures. And I think they will, they're very supportive of pedestrianisation and the allocation of road space for cycle infrastructure, for example. So I think the public will be behind measures. Now, a 300% increase in car parking charges, that's effectively making it putting in a prohibition. But I do think that there are other measures, including the provision of free car parking, that should be looked at first. That's where we're going to get the biggest bang for the buck, and that's the space where I think we should be concentrating first.
All right, well, thanks for joining us this morning and sharing your thoughts on that.
RTE Radio 1 Sport with Kia. Going electric, go really electric with a plug-in hybrid from Kia.
Movement that inspires.
Morning, Ireland, and lots of news this morning about that new and worrying COVID variant found in South Africa, and this variant having an impact on the sports news too. Here's Des with the latest.
Yeah, thanks, Anya. Certainly is Munster are in South Africa to play two games in the URC, and they're due to play the Bulls tomorrow and then play the Lions in Johannesburg the following weekend. And Munster are then due to come back and play in the Heineken Cup, play Wasps in Coventry. But with travel bans being imposed and South Africa last night being put on the UK red list, and it now looks like Europe is following suit on the back of the discovery of the new variant of COVID, we're expecting all games in the URC in South Africa to be called off. We're expecting a statement on that this morning. But of equal significance, in the Joburg Golf Open, 15 players have withdrawn this morning. I think they're virtually all British and Irish, but all four Irish players involved have withdrawn as well. Cormac Sharvin, Jonathan Caldwell, Niall Carney and Paul Dunn. And Paul Dunn joins us now live from South Africa. And Paul, thanks for joining us. I understand you're trying to get to the airport now.
Yeah, I'm just standing outside the hotel here waiting to get a lift to the airport. I was lucky, I got a flight out of here, so I think, you know, the flights are being snapped up every few seconds, so if you can get one, you're lucky at this stage.
Have some of your colleagues found it difficult to get flights out?
Well, I'm just not sure everyone's aware, like, because I went to bed early last night because I was up early this morning and didn't really look at my phone until I had 3 holes left to finish in my first round, and then when I came in, I turned my phone on and I had messages from everyone asking me if I was going to go to the airport or stay and play, and that's when I started looking into it. So I think a few people are on the course without kind of a real idea of what's going on, but some people are finding it hard. Yeah, I've heard people can't get a flight till Sunday evening, and the only flights available are kind of through Ethiopia, and I think that the stuff in Ethiopia, nobody fancies traveling through there either. So bit of a minefield at the minute.
Sure, and the consequences for guys who get a flight out as late as Sunday evening is they will then have to quarantine for 10 days if they go back to the UK.
Yeah, and I think the Scottish guys are in worse trouble because I know, according to them, from 4 a.m. tonight, they are put on the hotel quarantine list, so they can't get back in time. So I think they'll have to go to England before they go to Scotland, or I don't know. It's kind of changing every few minutes, so nobody's quite sure what's going on. So I think everyone just wants to get out of Africa as quick as we can.
And did the European Tour give you any advice on it, Paul?
No, they just said that they are still confident that the tournament bubbles are a safe place to be. Now, I think the problem they're going to have is that most of the staff are UK-based, and we're supposed to be here for 3 weeks, so like, I'm assuming the staff aren't going to want to stay for 3 weeks, so that means after quarantine they'll miss Christmas. So I'm sure there's a lot of kind of internal stuff going on between them. So, but we haven't got an update from them, but they've just said, like, if we wanted to withdraw, we can withdraw without fines and without penalties or anything like that. So,
okay,
it's kind of ever changing, I think.
Sure. And a final question, Paul. To your knowledge, has any player from the UK or Ireland chosen to stay and finish out the tournament?
There is some British players on the course. Now, whether they've decided, knowing the facts or not, I don't know. But they're on the course. They might have just, we were up at 4:30 this morning to restart at 6:30. So, you know, a lot of people, when they're that tired, they don't look at their phone. They just go ahead and play. So, I'm not sure everyone's aware of it. But, you know, some people might choose and stay, and they might spend the winter down in South Africa. Some players do that anyway to practice, but I don't know, to be honest, answer.
Sure. And just to clarify, in your own case, am I right in thinking you're not coming back to Dublin, to Greystone?
No, I'm going back to Dubai. I'm based in Dubai this winter. Yeah. I'll be back for Christmas, but I know Dubai, when I looked at the flights on Skyscanner, they had a warning beside them that said entry may be prohibited, so it sounds like they're, you know, getting ready to kind of follow suit as well, so.
Okay, well, look, hopefully you get out of there safely, Paul, and thank you very much for taking the call. I appreciate it. It's very chaotic there. That's Irish professional golfer Paul Dunn, amongst the four Irish golfers who have withdrawn from the Joburg Open in South Africa this morning as confirmation of the new COVID variant there and the travel ban which was introduced in the UK last night. So we're expecting confirmation that Munster's games will be off, that all the games in the URC in South Africa for this weekend and next weekend will be called off officially, but no word of that yet. The URC games here, though, obviously will go ahead, and Connacht no doubt will have a big crowd tonight at the Sports Ground. They take on the Ospreys, and then tomorrow night we have the big game in Dublin when Leinster host Ulster at the RDS. Moving on to soccer, and the Republic of Ireland women's team were held to a 1-1 draw by Slovakia at Tallaght Stadium last night. The Irish team really didn't perform particularly well. They'll be disappointed. They're ranked higher than Slovakia. Slovakia went ahead early in the second half. Katie McCabe scored the equaliser in the 65th minute. But with Sweden beating Finland, we're still in with a chance of playoff spots, etc. It's early enough days. Ireland now play Georgia next week. After the game last night, Adrian Eames got the reaction of Katie McCabe.
Yeah, I think we're lucky not to have lost the game in the end. I think we showed great character to fight back and get the equaliser, and Louise Quinn done brilliantly to block their shot in the end. So, yeah, look, we're disappointed. We dropped points tonight, but still a lot of football to be played in this qualifying campaign, and we look to move on.
Does it feel like a setback, though, having done the hard part of going to Helsinki, beating Finland away from home, that you weren't able to back it up with a win here tonight despite your best efforts?
Yeah, I think, look, you have to give credit to Slovakia as well. They came at us and they played some good football tonight, but ultimately we need to be better, especially at home. This is our fortress, and yeah, we'll look to obviously take the positives we've played tonight, fix up the mistakes, and hopefully finish on a high on Tuesday.
That's a hugely important game now, George. Obviously, bottom of the group, you'll be expected to win that. So that carries with it, though, expectancy. That brings pressure, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think in all games in the World Cup qualifying campaign, there's pressure. There's pressure every time you pull on this shirt. You're representing your country, so you want to win games as much as you can. So, yeah, look, Georgia will be no mugs. They've got, some good little players in the team. So, yeah, we'll have a look at them, reassess this and move on to Tuesday.
That's Katie McCabe. Now, West Ham are through to the last 16 of the Europa League with a game to spare. They had a 2-0 victory at Rapid Vienna. Celtic, though, gone from the Europa League. They will qualify for the conference. They were leading 2-1 in the closing stages at Bayer Leverkusen, but lost 3-2. Rangers beat Slavia Prague. Leicester City had a 3-1 victory over Legia Warsaw, but the worst result of the night, undoubtedly Tottenham's. They lost 2-1 to Slovenian Minos Mura in the Europa Conference League. Now, ahead of Sunday's FAI Cup final, the big game here tonight sees Waterford play UCD at Richmond Park in the playoff for a place in next season's Premier Division. Waterford sacked their manager Mark Bitcham this week, but he told a British radio station yesterday his refusal to play the owner's son led to a deterioration in their relationship. Manchester United are close to appointing Ralf Rangnick as their interim manager on a 6-month contract. He's had a lot of experience in the Bundesliga and is credited with guiding RB Leipzig to their huge success in recent years. There was a great win for the Irish men's basketball team last night. They beat Cyprus in their Eurobasket qualifier in Nicosia. Jordan Blount top scored with 21 points as Ireland won by 81 points to 73. And finally, racing after Willie Mullins' treble at Thurles yesterday and ahead of a big weekend this weekend. The action today is at Dundalk Mary and the first race is off at 4 o'clock.
And we're going to stay with COVID and its impact on our health system. The CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid, is with us. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
And let's start with that latest news coming of that travel ban because of these growing fears about this new variant emerging in Southern Africa. We're already in the grip of a Delta surge. How worried are you about the potential impact this new variant could have on the health system?
Yeah, I think our own Department of Health issued a statement on this last night in terms of how they're monitoring it. But obviously the concern in terms of any variant is that, you know, can potentially evade the body's immune response and make it more transmissible, which we know from Delta can have significant impacts. There's no case identified yet in the UK or in the EU as we understand it, but certainly in South Africa, I think there's about 59 cases identified yesterday. And in one province in particular where the positivity rate went from about 1% to 30% in about 3 weeks. So it would have an obvious cause concern, but I know the WHO are meeting with South African authorities today, and you've just heard the other statements made from the EU. So we await to see the further assessment through our own department, and they'll obviously have no doubt between CMO keeping government advised. And, you know, does this move from a variant of interest to a variant of concern? And that's what our Department of Health will be monitoring.
And you and other senior management in the health system in the last week have been describing the strain on the health system and the hospital system as grim and very grim. Has that changed at all in the last week in terms of the numbers in hospital and ICU and the pressure on the system?
I think the reality is we're still hovering around this 600 mark of people in hospital. Right, last night it was at 556 and 126 people in ICU, positive COVID patients. But that will slightly increase, I've no doubt, this morning. So we're still hovering around that number. I think a couple of things we would take some comfort from, but far too early with the strain we are having in our hospital system. And certainly the actions that we took last week to try and mitigate a lot of the risk across our hospital system by, you know, keeping a priority focus on urgent elective care and indeed COVID patients, trying to further scale up our ICUs, which we're doing at the minute, for the use of private hospitals, for the use of step-down beds in the community. There are actions we've taken to mitigate the risk, but still high risk in our hospitals. But what I would take encouragement from is, which is the public's response. I think the public have really got it once again and understood fully the high-risk situation that we're in and the public actions, which is our first lines of defence. But public have taken that do make a big difference to us, and the real challenge is now that we need to sustain that now, because yes, we're still at high risk in our hospital situation, and the public's response is very welcome and encouragement, but we really need to sustain this now for a period of time.
Let's talk about the testing centres. We had a quick check this morning, and by our count there are only four centres: Donegal, Mayo, I think Shannon Airport, and one other in Roscommon, that have available slots for testing today. So the system is still overburdened.
Yeah, and just to explain what we are doing and the current situation, if just over the last 7 days up to last night, there's now over 210,000 PCR tests completed in our labs. And if you remember this figure of 15,000 tests in the community per day that we had, we scaled it up to 20,000, but over the last week we're having days of 26,000 and over. And we're still having very high positivity rates of transmission levels in the community, between 15 and 19%. What we have done to further scale up is extra centres, extra hours. We brought on further private capacity in three of the airports. Next week we'll bring on three further centres through private capacity. We're also scaling up our own workforce and the defence forces and redeployment of our own staff to it for their pop-up clinics from the National Ambulance Service. But I do want to make the point, Mary, you know, it's not elastic and it's not infinite, the resource that we can put into this. So what we are doing is prioritising those clinically referred through GP general practice, and also symptomatic close contact. So certainly some people who are self-referring are experiencing delays, and I want to acknowledge that. But what I will say to people, what is really important, if anybody's experienced delay, it's ultimately key that everybody does isolate if you're symptomatic, and it's really key that you continue to isolate for at least 48 hours after your symptoms dissipate. So, you know, we will get to people, and we are getting to, the vast majority of people are getting same day and next day service.
You are asking them to be patient, and I thought it was noticeable the other night that even your swabbers and testers were reporting people getting just a little bit more irritable about those delays.
And we understand that, and we've been communicating strongly over the last few days to explain the reality of the situation, and I think it's incumbent on me and on behalf of the HSE to explain the reality. But that's a massive scale up that we have put in place. It's a massive engagement of extra capacity, extra hours, extra centres, private capacity. But we are doing this at a time where we're, you know, severely challenged to resource up, which we have done, which I'm happy to talk to you in the booster programme, but also the significant strain across the health system from our GPs, general practice, our hospitals and our community services. So it is challenging, but look at the volume. They're at over 1 million PCR tests completed in a 6 week period. On any given week now, we're testing between 4 and 5, the equivalent of between 4 and 5% of the population. You know, they are massive numbers by any health system.
Let's talk about the vaccines, and we'll talk about the boosters in a minute, but it looks like the European Medicines Agency has green-lighted vaccines for children from 5. It looks like NIAC will follow on. Are you ready to deliver?
You know, firstly, we welcome that decision. It's by the EMA. It's obviously under consideration now by the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, and ultimately it'll be a decision for a government recommendation, which we expect. From our perspective, we are not waiting on that. We're working through, first of all, the delivery schedule from the suppliers of the vaccine, and all indications are all across Europe that that will be towards the end of December. What we are doing immediately is finalising what would the operating model, how would we bring through, with parents' consent, children through vaccination centres, general practice, pharmacy. I want to seek, and have asked my own team to put together a process where we will engage with parents to get their view about what would be important for them in terms of bringing children forward for vaccination. We want to make it a very safe environment and a pleasant environment for young children. So we will seek their views by various processes that we will engage
with
parents.
What is the thinking so far? I mean, would you consider a rollout through the school system, which is used, of course, for delivering other vaccinations?
Well, we look at all options, but the reality of it is there's, you know, over 3,500 primary schools, and we do have a very significant vaccination centre infrastructure all across the country. So we want to do it in the most efficient way. Once we get the clearance, once we get delivery of the schedule, there's about 480,000 young children in scope. So we do see the primary channels that we have between vaccination centres, GPs and pharmacies. But we won't be ruling out the option of schools either. But we will bring forward the recommendations to the Minister.
And it can't be one or the other. It can't be roll out a vaccination to children at the expense of the continuation of the booster programme. Can you do both?
Well, the reality of what we're doing right now is we're doing both. If you take the current booster programme, we're working across all the different groupings or cohorts recommended by NIAC. So if you take today, we've now 630,000 boosters completed and 76,000 third doses for immunocompromised. And right now we're working across long-term care facilities, practically complete, just to revisit some with outbreaks, over 80s, 85% complete, 70s, 79s with great work by our GPs, now two-thirds of those complete with 215,000. 60s to 69s now well advancing because more people are eligible for that through our vaccination centres. And indeed with healthcare workers, over 60% of them completed now. So the model now is a parallel working through agreed groups that have come based on eligibility, and a combination of appointment-driven vaccination centres and specific, from this weekend and the next week, specific centres offering at specific times a walk-in facility for those who are eligible in the age.
And just remind us, will you, again, for those who are eligible who can go to walk-in centres, are these people over 60 who are already 5 months, have 5 months gap between vaccines?
Yes, Mary, thanks for clarifying. That's what it will mean. And from this weekend, what I encourage everybody is to watch our site, hse.ie. From this weekend and into next week, we'll be specifically focusing on the 60 to 69-year-olds and healthcare workers initially. And that will be combinations of, say, appointment-driven, but walk-in facility at specific sites at specific times. But the key point is, if you are in that age bracket, first of all, but secondly, that you are in at least the 5 month eligibility criteria, so 5 months from your second vaccine. Unfortunately, it won't be possible for us to give a booster to somebody who's A, not in those age brackets or cohorts that we're doing, and B, is not within that 5 month eligibility criteria.
And when can you get to the 50 and upward age group? Because they're cleared as well for a booster.
Yeah, and as I say, very strong progress. If you look at the scale we're now operating at, last week alone, almost 200,000 vaccines administered. So we've scaled up very significantly. We now have this parallel working, as I say. It's now given us the opportunity to bring forward rather than where we might have planned towards the end of December for over 50. So that's now going to be brought forward to the middle of December. And we're also now starting from next week, the medically vulnerable group, there's about 470,000 in that group, minus the ones who are, we've already done to the third dose. And those people will be starting to receive appointments from this weekend and coming forward for vaccination from next week. So all across all the groups,
and
really
what
strong
is
progress.
The rate of no-show? Because I heard figures earlier in the week of booster no-shows between 25 and 50%.
We have had in some centres across the country, and we're putting in some processes to try to do that. So we are contacting people more proactively now and to ensure appointments are kept. There has been some issues where people may have an appointment in the vaccination centre and obviously have got it in the pharmacy, and we're strengthening that facility and the software so that we can at least take that appointment down as the pharmacies are doing it. So we're putting in some changes and processes in place, and equally for a person if they are notified of appointment that they can notify notify us back through our site that they've got their appointment somewhere else in another location. So we do expect to see that, and all evidence we're seeing from our vaccination centres, and I've been in some from last weekend, you know, strong numbers of people now coming through, strong queuing. We are getting through them efficiently as we can, but we've certainly seen a massive scale up.
Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE, thank you for your time.